every sports fan has an opinion. Well, these are ours.
Ours.
Welcome to Brock and Pep's Unsportsmanlike Convo.
Right!
And here are your hosts, Brock Fleming and Pep Cariotti.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. It's been a little while. We are back on for a couple of things. It seems to... Well, I'm Brock, and with me, as always, is P-Dog Cariotti, who is... what are you throwing out there? What do we got? Madden 95 for Sega Genesis.
Probably the last time the Detroit Lions were relevant.
Ah, now I see the relevance of that. I thought you were just saying you finally upgraded to the Sega Genesis. Pepper notoriously decades behind in his video games.
I'm still rocking this PS4 that your brother gave me, and it's like, I'm sure the PS5 is just like mind-blowing and all that virtual reality stuff's crazy, but like, I've just bought the new version of NBA 2K. It is ridiculous, the detail. I don't know what I'm missing with the PS5, but PS4 is still doing the thing for me. I mean, it's wild. The detail is insane.
Yeah, PS4 is pretty good. Jackson still uses that. I picked up an Xbox, so I've moved to the... I think I just realized I don't have the pop filter on here. There's a couple of pops. Anyway,
I moved to the Xbox
Series X. Yeah, so the equivalent to the PS5. Mm-hmm. And it was because a couple buddies have it, and they really talk about the membership. So PlayStation 5, you got to pay a yearly membership, and then you buy the games. There's like a membership level with Xbox that gives you EA games that you can download for free for a lot of them. If they're the brand new ones, maybe not, but some of the old ones like NHL 23 is free and all that kind of stuff. So you just have access to all these. You could try a bunch of different ones. Actually, I've been into F1 racing as of late with that one. It's a ton of fun. Yeah.
I can imagine with friends doing that with friends, like sitting virtual, whatever, remotely. That would be pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, I got a little wheel here. Mike Dean has a wheel. We've been in a co-op season, like whatever. It's fun. He's pretty good. But
Can I please watch? Can you stream that?
I made the joke. I don't know who's listening, but whatever. It's I was looking at, there's a job posting for like a level up, right? Like the director level and stuff. And I get it sent to my email, and it's right around lunchtime. And I started thinking, I'm like, oh, maybe I should apply for it, maybe whatever. And then I realized I got two hands on the wheel already. I'm like, well, no, I'll be called into meetings all day if I'm in one of those positions. I got lunchtime racing to do. Anyway, it's all about a work-life balance.
Oh, that's welcome to my world, pal.
Yeah. So you called this meeting of the minds, if you will, as you have some thoughts going into the NFL. So this is going to be 20 minutes of straight NFL talk.
Yeah. And
you know what? Haven't had the NFL intro in a while. NFL.
Love it. Love it.
We are into the conference championships, which feature, unfortunately, the Ravens are hosting the Chiefs instead of the Buffalo Bills. We were both there at Curtis's house for that game. We'll touch upon later. Yeah. And then the Niners are hosting the Detroit Lions for the first time, who are relevant, like you said, since what, 94, 95 is
90. Well, that was a joke, really. But 91, I think, was the last sort of time they were in the playoffs. I think they may have won a round too, but that was Barry Sanders days, man, like crazy.
It's been quite the run. It's a lot of fun. I am full on that bandwagon.
Oh, me too.
I feel really good for Goff. Even the first round where they're facing Matt Stafford, you know, the guy who's done so much for that city over the years, fought through a lot of stuff and like was adopted from them. And then once he went away and he won a Super Bowl, you know, it was one of those, like, it had to be full of mixed emotions when he comes back, where, you know, he's the guy that you cheered for so long. You want to see him do well. You don't want to see anything bad happen. But at the same time, you're like, man. And Megatron, I don't know if you heard the mic up when he's hugging Stafford and he's like, love you, brother. He's like, I need a couple from you tonight. And he's like, I'm not talking about touchdowns. So some stuff were like, hey, you know, I know Stafford's a competitor. He's not going to throw the game. And he played very well, I thought, all things considered, that game. So there is no, there's zero like chance that, you know, he did anything to pay back Eminem or Megatron in terms of that kind of stuff. But I felt, you know, it was pretty proud of Goff and how he handled it and how the Detroit Lions came out and played. It was pretty cool.
I'd love to be able to pull up the podcast because we I'm 99.9% sure we did a preseason evaluation during the year that they both got traded for each other. And I think we were both in agreement that like it was kind of a win for both teams. Goff was coming off the Super Bowl appearance either the year before or the year before that with the Rams against the Patriots. And Stafford needed a change of scenery. I think everybody realized that. And I said, and I think you agree with me, that it was, I thought, like, you know what? This is going to be good for both guys. I think eventually this will end up being good for both players. Stafford wins a Super Bowl, and now Goff is basically on the doorstep, you know? So
at least like, getting back, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm happy for them. And, like, I guess let's start, well, I'm going to start with that side of the bracket because, you know, the victory over the Rams, I thought the Rams did a great job just to get in the playoffs. I mean, they were like 4-7 at one point, and they worked their way into the mix. So congratulations to them. How about that Puka Nacua kid?
Oh, kid went for what? He was like a 190 or something in that game. Like, it was
unbelievable.
Kid's always open. I mean, he was doing his thing early in the year, but when Cooper Kupp comes back and they start adding a couple other guys that are healthy, it takes a bit of the attention off. He is, you know, a rookie still. So they're not going to give him that same level of respect, but he continued to produce, continued to get open. You know, the relationship, Matt Stafford has made receivers' careers throughout his whole career. And by that, I mean, like, anybody who plays with him becomes a stud receiver if they play with him for long enough. Mm-hmm. Like, look at the receiving core that he's worked with and stuff over the past. And it's just, He's a gunslinger, and he gets him the ball. And Puka's no different. Kid's been awesome.
Yep. And, you know, I was reading a little bit about him and why he dropped as far as he did in the draft. And, you know, you could certainly attest to this. Like, some of it was measurables, like his 40 time and some of that other stuff. I'm like, when we're talking about – did nobody
scout this kid? I can attest to that because I'm slow? Is that what that was?
No. Well, you know, you have history with combines and that kind of thing, okay, right? Okay. So it's like when we like examine it with like a microscope, how did teams miss on this guy?
I mean, it could, like, it's early, but could this be something that's along the Tom Brady sort of lines? You know what I mean? You say, okay, well,
sure.
Tom Brady was overlooked by how many draft picks, how many rounds, and say, look what happened to him. I cannot emphasize this enough to say that an athlete's success is like 90% being in the right situation, in the right scenario, with the right system, the right teammates, the right coaches, all the right timing. That's 90% of whether a guy is successful or not, and like long-term successful. So if you take, like, you know, we were talking about Mahomes and when he got drafted, the trade that the Bills had made for Mahomes to get the 10th, for the Chiefs to get Mahomes at 10th, they got a bunch of returns. They got some real good players in return. They got Pat Mahomes, you know? So you say, well, if they had drafted Pat Mahomes, would Pat Mahomes be Pat Mahomes without, you know, Travis Kelce, without Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy running that offense and being as creative as they were, and Tyreek Hill, where I have a guy who could throw 70 yards. I have a guy that can run 70 yards in about 3 seconds. So that combination, that, you know, having the top taken off of every defense on any given play, like, if he doesn't have all those, does he become Pat Mahomes? The Pat Mahomes we know today, right? It's a scenario. It's a situation thing. You put Josh Allen into that scenario. Josh Allen's got a cannon. Josh Allen can run. If he's with Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy, I bet you he's probably in the same situation. Anyway, I just think there's a lot of intangibles and situational things that need to come into play for an athlete to be successful, especially on a football field.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Enough about, you know, Josh Allen. These are the only quarterbacks he's beaten in the last little while or whatever, and they put this list, and it's not great. But show me one time where Josh Allen lines up versus the other quarterback on the field and that quarterback beats him or vice versa. It doesn't happen. They're both on the sidelines watching. It's the defense. It's all there's, you know, 22 other guys that are playing or 21. And you know what I mean? Like it's anyway, all that kind of stuff. It bothers me, but it's all about the situation and the right fit.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, I'd have to agree. And I think like it clearly it's a good fit for him. He came in as a low round draft pick and you got your, like you say, a stud quarterback and a really, really good number one receiver in Cooper Kupp. So that takes the pressure off a kid like that. But all in all, I'll give him credit, man. He made the best of his situation. Like, and he, if it wasn't for him, who knows where the Rams would be, including Stafford. I mean, I think Stafford has to give him a little bit of credit too. That kid played his ass off. I mean, I was really impressed with him.
Well, he stepped up, right? Cooper Kupp went down with an injury, and that was a big hole. Like, that's a huge part of your offense, and it was the style of play. And Puka's style fit into a lot of the holes that Cooper Kupp had left because of
rugged
injury. Yeah, tough timing, super clean routes, really good hands. You know, like, those are all the strengths that Cooper Kupp has, and Puka has the same type of things and really filled in. I mean, you know, kids coming out of – he was at Washington for the first couple of years in college, ended up at BYU, drafted out of BYU, had some good numbers, nothing crazy, you know. But BYU is – I mean, historically has had some pretty good offenses, but I really don't know how relevant they were in 2022 and 2021 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They weren't on my radar. Let's just put it that way. So, you know, that obviously affects as you play against the right competition, you know. Is he – he probably would have been better off to stay at Washington and maybe, again, help his draft stock. But whatever. The situational. Exactly the same thing. You say, okay, it's a situation. You know, it's it wasn't the right one for him. I think he only went at 8 games, only had 7 receptions, 168 his first year. 3 games, had 9 receptions, 151, got hurt in Washington, then transferred. And then, he, you know, he's right up to 43 and 48 receptions for the year, which is not bad for college. You know, averages 18 and 13 yards per catch and stuff. So he was getting the ball. So he got noticed, you know, but the fact that he did it at a BYU instead of, you know, Washington or, you know, maybe a Big Ten or SEC type school is going to, you know, that's going to hamper you a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to the game that the Lions actually have today. So, or on the weekend, they're moving over and playing San Francisco. And as simple as I could put it, it's going to be whoever can win the line of scrimmage. And I know that Detroit handled the Rams and Aaron Donald. I thought they did a good job with them, but this is a whole other beast. You got Chase Young, you got Bosa, there's a couple other kids that play in the middle that, I mean, that's one of the top fronts in the NFL. And then you've got arguably the best middle linebacking core in the NFL in San Francisco and aggressive, tough, DBs, cornerbacks, and safeties in San Francisco. It's a whole other beast. So that being said, Detroit might have arguably, if they're healthy, I don't know if how healthy Ragnow is going to be, but the best offensive line in football, second best offensive line. Penei Sewell is a monster, and they can run the football. I don't know if they're going to be able to run the football on San Francisco. I hope they can, because that'll open up play action. And, you know, they just picked up Zach Ertz off the scrap heap, and they're going to move him up to the big show, the big roster. So that's another weapon for Goff. And, you know, they got that Laporta kid and St. Brown. I like what they're doing in Detroit, but I don't know if they're ready. I don't know if they're ready.
You basically hit that's playoff football is winning the line of scrimmage. They have great, if Detroit cannot run the ball and they're put into passing downs, I think that favors the 49ers. You know, having a guys like Chase and Bosa pin their ears back, that's a tough ask. Now, Penei Sewell is his second year, I think, now, and he's got the highest rating for run blocking for an offensive tackle in like ever since the what's it called, PFF, Pro Football Focus, is that what that is?
I think so.
Anyway, whatever, they do the ratings. Since they've been doing the ratings, this is the highest they've ever had. the way you usually combat really good pass rushes is because generally pass rushers are strong in one and not in the other, or lesser in the other. So, you know, Bosa and Chase are great pass rushers, but you attack them. You attack that angle right at them and bring the linemen right at them, because usually they're built for a bit more speed and stuff because they want to get those edge rushes. They're not built to plug holes as much. So if you can attack them and get to that next level to the linebackers with the linemen, that's your only hope. But the Lions need to be able to establish that run, and they have a couple of running backs that can do that. If they can establish the run, that will set up a little bit more time for Goff when he's doing those, when he's actually dropping back or some sort of play action. You gotta respect it. The same thing goes for San Francisco. Detroit's D-line is pretty good. Hutchinson's a pretty good defensive end. They're going to get some pressure on Purdy. What happens when he has pressure? Sometimes he makes mistakes. You know, he is very good, but just like any quarterback, especially ones that are a little bit younger, mistakes will happen. So from their perspective, they definitely need to have that pressure on Purdy. 49ers are going to want to establish a run. You know, CMC and those guys are built for that. Those little dump passes, the extensions of the runs, all those things to kind of keep Detroit on their heels a bit are things that's going to happen. Is Deebo Samuels healthy? I think that's a huge deal, whether or not he's healthy, because with him in there, it's like the Cooper Kupp and Puka saying, you know what, we got two or three of these guys that now are concerns, as opposed to when one of them's out, now you can kind of focus a bit more on CMC and say, you know what, he's the one that's not going to beat us. Let's make Brock Purdy throw it and hit Ayuk, or, you know, Jennings had a huge game last week too, as like the third receiver, as Kittle's get into it a bit. But I mean, San Francisco's O-line is arguably right up there with Detroit's too. So it's actually going to be a lot of fun to watch from a trench perspective.
I think so. And I, you know, if we were to make two columns, right, and start checking off, okay, who has the advantage here, 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 I would be like, I'd be checking both columns for a lot of things for both teams, like completely dead even. However, I don't think Detroit's secondary is going to be able to hold up. I really don't. I think, like, I believe me, I've spent the last 3 years watching Cam Sutton in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure that secondary is quite up for the task. That's just my opinion. I'm not picking a winner. Like, I'm not picking San Francisco or Detroit. I'm cheering for Detroit. That's all I'm going to say on this game. But in my heart, I feel like San Francisco has the edge, but I'm not picking a winner.
That's fair. You know, I think that I think Detroit's receiving core is better than San Francisco's if Deebo was hurt.
Ooh, it's really, eh? Even with Ayuk and Jennings and all those guys, you think Amaron St. Brown? I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly.
He is awesome.
He's good, eh?
He is really awesome.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And you know that Josh Reynolds is questionable too, so we'll see, but you know what? You're probably spot on. I think it's the check boxes for the strengths are all the same. The check boxes for the weaknesses are pretty similar. You know, you like San Francisco secondary a little bit more. There's a couple guys that are pretty decent for sure. They're a bit more aggressive. But don't sleep on Detroit's either. So yeah, I'm wearing my Lions hat. I'm going for the Lions. You know, am I putting a bunch of money on the Lions? Yep. But
hey, don't even talk to me about that, bro. I had the Lions and the Steelers making the Super Bowl for a cool $26K. I would have split that in half with the guy I put the bet with. But I can't believe Detroit's made it this far. So I am so rooting for them. You know how I feel. Jerry Kwapis, who's a really just a nice man, a nice human being, called and left my brother a voicemail in 2008. It was the last home game of the year. It wasn't their 0-16 game. It was like 0-14 game or something like that. I think they finished the season on the road. And he left the saddest and drunkest voicemail I've ever heard. And I'll paraphrase. It was just like, you know, I've been a season ticket holder for the last 30 years. I'm effing done with this. I bought tickets for my kids, my two boys. I'm done with this bullshit. And that was pretty much it. And it hit home how I've been pretty spoiled to be a Steeler fan. you know, actually Pittsburgh won the Super Bowl that year. But I mean, if you will root for a franchise that is a perennial loser, I don't know how you do it.
Well, I mean, I guess your definition of perennial loser would be need some clarification, because I did grow up a Bills fan, and that's a perennial lose of some sort. I mean, you watch them Super Bowl or not, you lose four of them.
It's a different kind of losing.
You know, to watch Curtis fade on that wide right field goal this last weekend was tough to watch. You know, it definitely hit home from that, you know, Super Bowl 25. So what's that, 28 years ago or something like that at this point?
1990.
You know, it's awful. Now, that being said, that was with a minute and a half left. Does Pat Mahomes take it down and they kick a field goal to win it? Likely. You know what I mean? Like, I would put a lot of money on that would happen. So it was just that the game ended at that point. You still had a glimmer of hope that something happened between, you know, that minute and a half left, a tip ball that wasn't caught and picked off, or, you know, some fluke that happens, but ultimately I think that doesn't. And I think Mahomes probably scores anyway. Looking at just quickly on some of the Lions O-line, like that Jonah Jackson, he's got a D for doubtful. So if he's doubtful and Ragnow is questionable, those are going to be huge downgrades for the Lions at that offensive line. And that actually might be the difference maker, depending on if they can suck it up and play. I don't know what their status of the injuries are. So, you know, I think anybody with a Q is going to play. A D is a... obviously a little bit more detrimental, but anyway, I'm pumped for the Lions game.
Well, I just saw, before we move on to the Chiefs and Ravens, and we won't take too much time on that, but we'll give it our best. The I do want to say, I just watched a clip of Dan Campbell when he was hired, and he was meeting the whatever family that owned the Lions, and you know, he had this big bushy goatee. It was only 3 years ago, felt like forever. But he just broke down in tears at the practice facility. And he's like, I'm going to do you guys proud. And, you know, I promise you that this city, if we make some noise, the city's going to be the craziest city in America. And man, he, not many guys live up to their promise. And win or lose, I mean, you got to love what Dan Campbell has done. And I got to tell you, I remember vividly saying, what the hell are they doing hiring this guy? He just seems to be like a rah-rah cheerleader, but sometimes the franchise is what they need. And I think his coordinators have done a fantastic job.
Yeah. Again, situation. How much does your team buy into what you're saying? That's really it. Are you buying into the vision? Are you buying into the culture? Are you buying into what Dan Campbell is all about? And it seems like Detroit is doing just that.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the AFC. And, out of all the pro sports that I follow, CFL, college basketball, college football, all the pro hockey, all that, the Baltimore Ravens are the team I dislike the most. And I can't stay unbiased. I can't stand the Baltimore Ravens for obvious reasons. I won't get into them. I just can't. So I am cheering for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I just want to tell you why. Apart from hating Baltimore, my sister, okay? My sister, who, by the way, I just realized, she told me this last weekend. We were having dinner. When I was in my last year of high school, she was playing ONTFL at quarterback. And she won 5 championships in a row at the highest level. And the only reason she stopped playing is because she tore her arm or a rotator cuff. I was like, Joss, what? You played quarter? Like, I mean, it's touch football or flag football or whatever it is. Yeah. But it was just, I had no idea. She's like, yeah, I love football. I said, well, how come you've never watched it with me? She's like, well, you know, work and I, you know, the kids don't really watch it. But she just, when Taylor Swift became a thing, she bought the Red Zone because her daughter, my niece, Taya, they wanted to watch football. They wanted to watch Taylor Swift and see what was going on. So she got Red Zone. This is a family that just sort of does Netflix and Crave and doesn't really do the cable thing. Got the NFL Red Zone, got one of the TSN channels. And now they're fully invested in the NFL. Like they're watching, my sister was telling me she was watching other games because in anticipation of the Chiefs game, just kind of watching stuff during the regular season. I said, what? How do you know all this stuff? She knew an injury report for the Dolphins one game. I'm like, this is really cool. And using them as a small example, but these are two people, my sister and my niece, living out in the middle of the Outaouais, who are now NFL fans because essentially because of Taylor Swift. Now, that's pretty damn cool.
People are hating on it, and I don't know why they would be doing that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, like thank there's you. Zero. Plus, it's not even like she's a, you know, it's not like Kim Kardashian is dating somebody and whatever, and she's the focal point. You say, okay, she's trash. She does no morals and no whatever. Taylor Swift is like the next door neighbor, you know, good kid that's a mega superstar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly who you want. And if the NFL has scripted this and whatever, kudos to them because, like you said, it's brought a whole audience to it. I mean, enough where, you know, Travis Kelce's jersey is like outselling most other ones because every teenage girl knows who Travis Kelce is.
And that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
It's a totally good thing. And I listening to the Kelce boys talk on their podcast, I think they're good at what they do. They're likable. And the fact that he's dating a person like that says a lot about his character. I mean, he could go any direction with girlfriends, and he chose somebody who's actually legit. And
that's a night and day from you. Obviously haven't watched Catching Kelce back in the day, which was his dating show where he was auditioning all these women and stuff like that. And he ended up going with like the one that was just, she was so annoying. Everybody hated her, but he was like, I like what I like. And he like started dating her, but he's matured since. So hey, listen, that I think. And I follow that family. Like I watch it, like Jason Kelce at the Bills game, even though he's there clearly cheering on his brother and the Chiefs to beat the Bills. He's at tailgates. He's doing shots out of bowling balls, like the traditional Bills type thing. You know, again, celebrating touchdowns. So that's fine. Shirtless and whatever in a freezing. But he comes out. He's out in those couple of things. He's talking to Bills fans. He's taking pictures with them. He's holding up little girls that Bills girls that are signs to get Taylor to notice and whatever.
Love
like
it.
It's they're a wholesome family and I love them for it. And there's rumors now that somebody was saying that they thought maybe Travis might call it quits after this season as well. Because even though Jason hasn't, I don't think made it totally official. I was listening to his podcast and he was kind of like, I can't make a rash decision after the season, but it kind of feels like it's going that way that, you know, Travis might too, depending on what happens this season. And, you know, they'll just take this podcast to the kind of next level and their stardom and everything that they're doing. People follow it. I mean, did you watch the Kelce documentary?
I did. It's awesome. Yeah.
It is. That guy, I would hang out with him all day.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, like, I think the if they win, I think he retires.
I think that's a big thing. If they win, that'll be the third one for him. He'll have had three.
Yep.
And then, he'll just be a stagehand for Taylor Swift's thing and make as much money as he's making now.
Exactly. Or the Kelces do a similar to what the Mannings are doing. I don't know if they have the wit that Peyton and Eli have. That's a topic for another day, but I love the Mannings. I love them. I love them. And I think the Kelces can kind of roll with that. And they have an automatic following. I think it's fantastic. So anyway.
Yeah, the Mannings, that's a whole other one. But Mannings play off each other so well. Like,
oh, so good.
Anyway.
So good. About the game, there's an actual game to be played. And Baltimore, I think, is favored. And I got to tell you, I mean, Baltimore, you know, I've seen them play a lot this year. I obviously watch them twice a year, guaranteed. But I've watched them about six times this year. And they are not, like, invincible. By any stretch, like they have a stout front four. They get to the quarterback. Clowney's having a pretty good second half of the year. He appears to be healthy. Their middle linebacking core are great, but they don't defend the pass well when it comes to tight ends, the middle of the field. I mean, Patrick Queen is not a great pass defender. Roquan Smith can't do it all by himself. And then after that, it gets pretty thin for Baltimore in the middle. So, my Steelers went in there and beat them, with their first team defense, and then we beat them in Pittsburgh. they're not invincible. And I don't believe that they have enough weapons on the offensive end to win this game. I just don't. I like Ladarius Sneed. I can't remember how he was for that. The kid who plays cornerback for Kansas City. Fantastic cornerback. Mm. I like their defense. I like Chris Jones. I like the middle linebacking core.
Ladarius is questionable. Looking at the right now, there's a lot of questionables when it comes to Kansas City. Key ones, there's a couple on the O-line. I think they play. Tooney and Smith, both guards are questionable, but I think they're – and actually, they got Nick Allegretti as their backup for both of them, so it'll be interesting to see if one or both happen to go out, then that's a different story. They'll play. Isaiah Pacheco is one that I think is systematically going to hurt them a little bit more with what they do with a lot of deception and the way they run the ball. Pacheco is a huge piece of that. So having Clyde Edwards-Helaire in there more will affect the offense a bit more.
Is Pacheco out?
He's questionable. He's just questionable right now. Okay. So again, I'm assuming most of these guys will play. Ravens have nothing that are questionable. Mm. I got to give it up to that Likely kid. Where is he? Isaiah Likely, that tight end who came in for Mark Andrews. He's made some really nice catches. He's a consistent guy. Honestly, it's going to come down, I think, to a lot of it's going to be how does Lamar handle Spagnuolo's defense? Mm. You know, traditionally his decision-making is not quite there. He's a little bit like Josh Allen still has that for me. The decision-making and like the timing routes and stuff, that's not there. That's not their style. It's more drop back, create some time with your legs and then hit big plays. If they can kind of contain him and make him have to make those reads, Kansas City secondary is no joke. And like you said, I think with that pressure, you know, that's probably an issue. And I think that's probably the biggest difference between these two games is the game control of one offense versus another. And Kansas City is constantly controlling the game to what they want. It just, they're able to do it. However, if they got to kill the time, they got to go fast, whatever it is, they control the pace of that game. And I just don't know if Baltimore can keep up with that.
So you look at that game for me, I look at, in contrast to the NFC, where we can actually break down and say, I think Detroit's secondary is a little bit weaker, so that's where San Francisco has the advantage. I don't see any glaring weaknesses with either of these teams. The way they play, like you nailed it. The styles of play are going to be fascinating. Like the DBs for Baltimore, their press coverage like the whole game. You know, so does Kansas City have the playmakers to get off the line and actually and run the route? It's going to be really fascinating to see the contrasting styles of play where Baltimore, I don't care what they say, they're still like ground and pound, you know, but they don't have the horses anymore. Like Dalvin Cook, what kind of shape is he in? Is he going to get any run? Do they have to rely on Gus Edwards? I mean, it's not enough for me. I don't see enough there for Baltimore to make a dent in this. But again, it's contrasting styles of play. Who's going to control the ball? Turnovers, all the playoff stuff, you know, turnovers are magnified times 1,000.
Keep Lamar in the pocket. Keep him, take his legs out of it, and you can control a good chunk of what their offense is doing. You know, like you said, press. Kansas City loves when you play press. And how do you beat press? You don't line up, stand still and let them press you. There's going to be a lot of motion. There's going to be a lot of moving. There's going to be a lot of different things that are going and eye candy that's going to take you out of that press for a second. Or if you press, they're going to hope you press, which is going to put you in a bad position. So I'll never bet against Andy Reid and that kind of creativity. He's one of my favorites to watch work
there you go.
And see what he comes up with every week. And, you know, can a Harbaugh get beat this year? Also, you know, news came out. Jim Harbaugh has signed as the head coach with the San Diego Chargers. San Diego Chargers?
I'll always call them San Diego. I don't give a rat's ass where they're playing football. But,
yeah,
Los Angeles. I don't know if that's a good move for him. I mean, they've got a okay quarterback who puts up big numbers, but have they even made the playoffs with that roster? There's a lot of holes to fill. Yeah, he should have stayed in college if he has.
I 100% the contract that was on the table, 10-125. I think you take that. You know, anyway, it screws up. That's the whatever college football. That's another podcast. It's broken. Okay. It needs to be fixed. But yeah,
that's it. So I hope it's Kansas City and Detroit in the Super Bowl. I respect Baltimore for the fact that they're like consummate winners, but I just don't like the roster. I don't like the team, but I respect what they've done and their success. That's who I'm cheering for. That's the way it's going to be.
That's the way it's going to be. And I don't have the Roadcaster to throw some tunes on here, so I don't even know how to end this. Normally, I throw music on and we fade out into the sunset. But on this one, whatever. Adios, amigos. We got NFL on the weekend. Let's go, Lions. Cool.
And one last thing, congratulations to the Ottawa Red Blacks. Drew Brown, big fan, bringing back Dominic Rimes. I think the Red Blacks have a semblance of an offense now. It's a miracle.
Wait. We'll have to see what it looks like on the field.
Yeah, correct.
All right, everybody. Appreciate it. We will come back with the next topic we have when we need to vent a bit. That feels like it's kind of what what our schedule is. So there will be a college football venting session in the near future because I cannot handle it. Anyway, All right. NFL is on right now, so I'm out of all my fantasy leagues. Clear sailing. Let's go, baby.